Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, car, what else? Cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. It's been a fairly hectic but quite exciting few days for me, Tony.
For you, yeah.
I'll kickstart by saying I've moved house.
You have?
Oh, well, moved flat. I do live in London, so house would be a stretch.
But no. But you're on the outskirts. You're suburban London now, mate.
I've moved further out.
Good.
So for those of you that might not know, I grew up in London, in pretty central London. I've spent all of my life...
Chelsea, to be specific. Mayfair.
Nice. Nice pitch, Tony. Get it right. If you're going to take the piss, get it right. So yeah, I'm very used to living, you know, very centrally, and London has been my home forever. But then coming back off the drive the world and things like that, you know, so a reprioritized my life and all that. And anyway, so yes, long story short, Vicky and I've moved a little bit further out. We're not out. I still think we're in London, southwest London to be precise, but we're not in the thick of it anymore, so we've got a little bit more space, still in an apartment, which I'm very happy about. And I feel like I've got a new lease on life.
Yeah, I always see London as like the single market town. As in, what I mean is, if you're single in your 20s, you want to live in central London in a flat. But as you get into your 30s and you get married and priorities change, you tend to move out more suburban. You need a bit more space. You don't want to be...
Isn't that just not a money thing? Because you can still have that life that you're talking about, a bigger house and space.
Correct. It's completely a money thing.
Yeah. You know, if you can afford the £9 million house in
Notting
Hill.
It's absolutely a money thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's literally it. I mean, that was the same for us.
And space.
To get the space that we wanted, we had to move a bit further out.
Yeah.
But if we were bazillionaires, of course, you can get amazing houses with gardens and space and all these things in central London. We just couldn't afford it. So anyway, we're very happy. We've moved to a fantastic new apartment. Very, very good. But it's meant that I've been so distracted the last, like, 10 days or so and buried in boxes.
I got a message for the weekend of just him sitting on the floor, basically surrounded by like boxes. I mean, it was just boxes. And I honestly, I've moved a few times and I could not, that would be my worst nightmare, mate. I can't deal with that.
And Vicky went off to a baby shower for me.
I don't blame her.
I was just sitting there like, right.
What do I do here?
As I say, like getting my brain in gear for like work and filming. I don't know. I was like, where are my batteries for my camera? I have no idea where anything is. It's been a little bit of a stressful experience.
I mean, you got a few quid. I'm not surprised you just didn't pay someone to pack it and unpack it when you get it.
I never had as many quid as you think I do. And secondly, I prefer to do it myself. I don't think, because where would they know how would they know where to put stuff?
Well, you tell them.
No, so what, I'm just going to sit there in a big armchair and be like, yes, put that in that cupboard,
yes,
please.
So you're paying for.
Come on. Have you, by the way, just as a complete side note, and to keep this podcast political, which we seem to do every single week, have you seen that article that came out about Prince Andrew, who's, I guess, royalist rather than political? So the maid was like, oh, he was such an asshole. He called me to come up 3 flights of stairs to close some curtains, and he was sitting next to the curtains. He could have done it himself. Like, what an awful human being. That's literally my dad. My dad will be sitting at home, and he has a housekeeper who helps look after the house and all that, and he'll literally be sitting next to the curtains, and he'll go, Why, and the curtain's closed. And he'll call her up and say, oh, excuse me, can you come here and close? And she has to walk on it. I'm like, Dad, you could have just stood up and closed the curtain.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're paying for that privilege, that's the point, mate.
No, fair enough.
What's the point?
That's exactly what he would say.
Correct.
But I just don't feel good to be sitting in an armchair sipping on a STG coffee, available now at drinkperla.co.uk, whilst telling people to put things away in drawers. I can do it perfectly well myself. Anyway. It's been an exciting few.
Have you unpacked the boxes?
Nope.
Well, then you can't do it perfectly yourself.
Got another 3 weeks until we've unpacked boxes, honestly.
By the time you unpack, we're trying to move out.
Yeah, probably. But it's been amazing, and it is amazing. I'm not sure I'm going to show much of it on social media. I don't know.
You're not going to do a house tour and a look at my crib like the most of them do?
What, do you know why?
Oh, it's a shame.
I know you're being
sarcastic. Really looking forward to it. No, I'm being deadly serious, mate. I like them.
Well, the reason I'm not doing it, I can read through your sarcasm, is I did do it like 4 years ago, and everyone was so horrible and so rude about the flat that we were renting at the time. I was like, never again. Oh, it's just not worth it. I mean, social media can be cruel at the best of times, but considering how excited, that was the first time Vicky and I had moved in together. We were super excited. We were super pleased and proud. And if you know about London rent, you know, it's extortionate and we were paying a lot. And just the comments were full of, oh, that looks like an absolute gypsy hole. And I was like, okay, not doing this again.
No, I would absolutely agree with you.
Yeah. So that's going to be staying private. But anyway, it's an exciting time. And if you thought that maybe things have been a bit quiet on some social media platforms, or maybe I've felt a little untogether, hopefully not, because I feel like I've been doing a good job so far this year. That'll be why.
So. What do you mean a bit quiet? You don't really post on anything anyway. Only YouTube.
What do you mean? No, I post everywhere. Are you mad? I post on Instagram stories, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok.
TikTok.
You just don't follow me anywhere else.
No, I follow you on most of them.
Yeah.
But you're not really that active on Instagram, mate. Really.
I post 2 to 3 posts in the grid per week.
Really?
Yep.
That many?
Yep. 2 to 3 a week, because that's in my content calendar.
Twitter, you're really not that active.
No, Twitter, I'm very quiet these days. I agree. Twitter, I'm very quiet. I read a lot of Twitter. I'm not sure what to say on Twitter anymore. No. You're very active on Twitter.
I only active because I like winding people up. Yeah. I mean, it is brilliant. If you want to set a grenade off somewhere, comment something controversial on Twitter, and then they're off. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And then you just sit there. It's brilliant. It gets me all afternoon. If I'm bored, I'll put something controversial on Twitter and just sit there and read it all.
Yeah, it's, I know. You just like winding people up. You send me a message saying, look what I just posted on Twitter. Set off a grenade. Anyway, that wasn't the only exciting thing to happen in the last few days.
Oh.
I have finally purchased my next alien.
Oh, my God. At last. Yeah. At last.
You and the rest of the audience, I think, will be like,
oh, my God.
5 months later. Can I just... This is me being slightly defensive, but also explaining, because I saw a few people being a bit like, just get on with it now.
Yeah.
I posted a video last week with Lenny Urban, talking about still shopping for my next alien. I'm in this Defend Alone. People are like, oh my God, ultimate tire kicker. There are a few reasons as to why it's taken me quite so long. Firstly, I announced that I was trying to get a new daily just before my end of year went insane last year, and I ended up traveling for about 2.5 months. So I just wasn't around. Secondly, as we all know, because the X3 has been so fantastic, it's been quite hard to figure out what to replace it with. And then thirdly, I launched a sort of series of looking for my next daily without really knowing that I was definitely going to get another daily. So anyway, long drawn out process. I have purchased a new daily.
Brilliant.
I'm telling you guys here now because, well, we love you, podcast audience, and I kind of feel like you're our friends. Not to say that the main channel audience are, but that's like business. These are my friends.
These are my friends.
These are my friends. You
50,000 friends.
Yes, 50,000 mates. The main channel is the business, is the running the business, the focus of the business.
Yeah.
So I don't think the car will be revealed in a main channel video probably until mid to late February.
Mainly really?
Because I'm going away. I've got some trips coming up. I've got some stuff going on in terms of actually being able to collect the car. Like lots of things.
You're not
going
collecting
on.
Until February.
I think I'm going
to. It's in the January now. Sorry,
I was going to say yeah.
Yeah, I keep forgetting.
But 2 or 3 weeks probably for the main channel video. So I'm not going to reveal what it is yet because I say the big reveal video will be a very hopefully to touch wood successful video on the main channel. Mm. So don't reveal too much here, but I think probably
I'm sure that'll do well. That video we might get 30k.
35 if I'm lucky.
Get more views on here.
I think maybe I will reveal it here on the Thursday.
Beautiful.
Before the video goes live on the Sunday. I think I'll do that. So yeah. Anyway, stay tuned. More to come, but I have finally resolved it. My next daily has been purchased.
So if you want to know what his next daily is, subscribe and you'll get an exclusive here first. Is that right?
So I was trying to cue you. You cottoned on right.
I was about to move on.
Right at the death.
So yeah, subscribe now if you're watching here on the YouTube channel. Turn on notifications. If you're listening, keep listening on whatever platform you're listening on. That's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it might be. Because yes, some point in February, I'll be revealing my next daily here on the podcast ahead of the main channel video going live a few days later.
Beautiful.
So, we have some car news to discuss.
Which is incredible.
Out of nowhere. Who saw this coming in the middle of January?
Who knew?
Not us. Some of it is our own news, but some of it's also been posted all over the internet. So, let's dive into that first. Because, have you seen, I'm sure you have, that apparently the first customer Valkyrie has been spotted driving around in Germany?
I've been tagged about 300 times.
3 million times. I think the clips of this car driving around maybe went out on or got posted on Thursday evening after this podcast went live. And from then until now, I think every day I've received about 400 links to that clip. But yes, essentially, supposedly the first customer Valkyrie has been spotted driving around in Germany. Now, the reason I say supposedly is for a number of reasons. At the end of last year, Aston Martin released a sort of press release saying, here is the first customer car rolling off the line, da-da! And we were a little skeptical at that point, being like, well, who is the customer? Is it actually going to be delivered? Like,
where's it going?
Where's it going? And the shots that have been released, well, firstly, they're semi-professionally shot. If it's a car spotter, well done, great shots. They're highly stabilized, filmed from a sort of tracking car. That's not a very easy thing to do. That's not like, oh, I've just spotted the car, I'm going to whip out a camera. So that's impressive. The sound is all off. And again, this is me being like a bit of a nerd. And do you remember when Shmi like delved into the high speed record of, who was that company that said that they got the world record for the fastest?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing that with Valkyrie. But the soundtrack doesn't quite add up. It's a lot of gearbox whine, a lot of sort of noises which you don't necessarily expect, and they also don't correlate to the footage you're seeing. So it's been edited weirdly. What I'm trying to get about is this a customer car? Or is this a final sort of pre-production run? Is this an Aston Martin executive? Is this, what? I mean, we don't know.
You know what I thought was a bit weird is, and listen, who am I to say who gets the cars first? But you'd think if a customer was going to get a car first, it would be American, Chinese,
well,
because of the market.
Lawrence Stroll.
Or someone, or a UK customer. Why would it be a German customer be first? I'm not saying that that's wrong. What I'm saying is from a look at this, surely there must be someone in LA or Beverly Hills that's ordered one. I mean,
yeah, I guess the thing which we don't know. So I had somebody who had one coming and cancelled it and was, you know, high up enough on the Aston list and had enough money to sort of be fairly high. I think he told me they got to choose their VIN number, their order slot, I think is what he said. And so it might not be of a first come, first serve. Somebody might just pick that they want 001.
Because you know Ferrari, on their really special cars, they definitely strategically pick where the first cars are going to be seen. For sure.
Exactly that. And so I wonder whether, you're right, I questioned it as well.
Yeah.
All the first cars to be in Germany, so it didn't necessarily add up, but we have no idea if it is a customer car, who that customer might be.
Then. Might not live in Germany, might have been there and car might be off to America now, we don't know.
And I don't know why I'm still inherently sort of, you know, suspicious of this whole thing.
Well, it's unlike Aston to lie.
Again, Tony's being sarcastic. It's a day of sarcasm for it. If you don't know, Aston do tend to slightly fudge quite a lot of things in there.
Really?
Yep. And so, yeah, I'm just skeptical. I think, you know, there's enough people I know who had Valkyries coming who are like, we know nothing about this. Mm. We don't know when our cars are coming. There's been no update. There's just this one supposed. So if you've got a Valkyrie coming on order, because some of you out there are crazy enough to have that, let us know. Have you received any updates? Have you received any communication about this first customer car? Because the other thing is, Aston revealed that sort of press release, the customer rolls off the production line.
It rolled back on.
Well, you think they'd make another big buzz about it being delivered. And
yeah, so, absolutely.
Anyway, I don't know. I'm just weirdly skeptical, but maybe you guys are bored of us being a bit skeptical. I am excited because my God, it looked insane in the footage.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
As a road car, that's not a thing. It looks like it's from 2052.
Yeah. But people used to say that about the LAF, didn't they? And even now, when a LaFerrari come out, that was like, oh my God, that looks like it should be out in 20 years time.
Fair.
You know, so
even a 720S.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But I think Valkyrie is 100% next level. And I think we're only going to start to see things similar when all these Le Mans hypercar, you know, whatever they're called, prototypes and things start to start to hit the road.
Yeah.
But no, insanely exciting. The sound, as I say, in addition to the sort of gearbox whine and things like that coming on, sounds great. And I cannot wait to see one in the flesh. Mm. That's why I just want confirmation that this is happening. Valkyries are coming and we're not being stooped.
Yeah.
That's why I think I'm coming at it from a different
perspective. Yeah. I agree, mate.
Okay, moving on. Lamborghini.
Oh.
I've written this down. Stelato.
Oh no, you've lost me. I'm gone.
Do you know about this?
No. What is it?
It's the off-roading Huracan.
Oh, the jacked up thing.
Do you remember? So a few years ago.
Yeah, I've seen that.
A few years ago, the concept got launched.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, what is this? They'll never build it. And now it's been spied testing an off-roading Huracan.
Yeah. Where's that going to go? In the desert? On the snow?
I mean, you would think it's like a UAE special, right? Like, straight out to Dubai. They would
Madness.
Love it there.
Straight on the dunes.
But what is going on? Because we're fairly confident of a 911 Safari, if that's going to be its formal name or not, we don't know. But it's a jacked-up off-roading rally spec 911.
Mm.
We've got now this Huracan Stelato. We had the Morgan off-roading concept thing. So why is it that manufacturers are suddenly going, let's take our sports cars and make them...
Let's jack them up.
Jack them up.
Make them worse.
Like the Taycan Cross / Sport / what, Turismo. It's like a sort of... Has the world decided that we all want to go off-road and want to go dune bashing? I don't know where it's come from.
Then buy a Range Rover.
Yeah.
Well, not for dunes, though, because they're not very good. Buy a Land Cruiser for dunes.
Buy a Land Cruiser. That's what they all love.
Yeah.
Now, I love the idea of like an off-roading sports car. Like, that's so my vibe. Like the old 60s, 70s rallying in 275s.
You know why I think they've done it? You know why I think they've done it? Because I think they obviously look at markets, and that's why they build these things. And they've obviously seen, whether it be on social media or whether they've just seen, that people have been modifying their cars a little bit, like what you've done to that Carrera T.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, there are and that is a thing, mate. And they, you know, people are going on these mega road trips, and you know, you go into Africa, you need a car like that. There's been some Top Gear specials where they've done that, where they've jacked the cars up, and maybe there is a genuine call for it now. And like we've said before, a manufacturer will really only make something if they're a business, if there's a call for it. So there must be a genuine call for it.
Well, I think you're right, you know, and we're seeing this more and more, aren't we, of manufacturers kind of really listening to or reacting to popular, you know,
their customers,
customers and social media trends and all these different things. And for sure, over the last 18 to 24 months, the interest or intrigue in rally-esque cars. Look at that crazy Singer Tuthill project that came out. You know, there is this kind of upward trend. 996 Road Trip, Brock doing that amazing stuff he is with his 911 and my Carrera T. I'm not taking any kind of credit for that. But yes, you're right. There's this interest in adventure.
And actually, when you think about it, the manufacturers haven't got to think, because they just go on social media and go, right, what can we make this week? What's trending? What do people want? I mean, it's just made their jobs miles easier.
Oh my God, if Ferrari unveiled a jacked up Lusso with rally lights, oh, I'd be all over it. I'd be straight down to Dick Lovett Swindon. Take my money.
The only one,
I've got none left. But you sound the only one. You're right in the sense where all they have to do is do a limited run of this. You know, 50 Huracan Stelatos, 150 911 Safaris, done. There'll be enough nut job collectors and idiots like me that will be like, oh, I'd love that for no apparent reason.
And it's not even that. When they're based on the same as the normal car, they're just jacked up. They're like a win-win financially, business-wise, because they're fundamentally going to be the road car, but just on different suspension and different tyres and different brakes, which actually, when we know about Lamborghini especially, they're shared via a huge group. So they're under the VW group. So they're just going to nick stuff from other brands, Bentley, Audi, Porsche.
So the cost to actually develop the car is
nothing.
Never going to be that high.
No.
And you're going to create this really cool cult. Do you need to grab that?
No.
Tony said it's been a bit quiet recently, so I don't want you to step away from any potential sales.
It's getting busier, actually, to be fair. It has picked up.
For those of you, by the way, just asking what's just happened, because maybe you're listening, Tony's phone started to ring. So.
On silent, because I'm professional, but I've turned it over.
Even more professional now.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, well, I think it's going to be interesting to see what the future trends might be. I think it's almost a dangerous move that manufacturers these days seem to be so quick to react to sort of, you know, popular trends. But cool to see, and I think it's exciting. Hey, look, if there's a day when I could end up on a road trip with a 911 Safari, a Huracan Stelato, a Morgan CX, whatever it was called, and I don't know what else.
Oh, who knows? We might all be doing road trips in jacked up safari stuff and going to places in cars that no one's ever been before.
But that's, I mean, for me, that is like the most exciting thing I've ever
heard. Yeah, me too.
Life.
I'd like to love to do that.
Well, there we go. Great. Well, we're going to be knocking down the doors of Lamborghini
and Porsche.
Porsche. You more Porsche. back to Aston Martin.
Mm.
There's a new variant of the DBX coming.
There is. I heard about this.
DBX. S, we think.
Yes.
Originally, I think, hoped that it would have the DB11 DBS V12 in it. It's likely to be just a tuned V8, right?
Correct.
So just a bit more of a spicy. They're going after a Nürburgring record or something. Mm. I mean, is it going to help? Probably not.
Well, it's always about price, isn't it, unfortunately? And when you compete with a Urus that sells hand over foot in terms of, you know, it doesn't lose any money. I mean, it's just difficult, isn't it? The brand of Lamborghini at the moment are very strong. Well, they have been, really, since they've been under the Volkswagen group.
For sure. But I have to say, you know, as much as I do tend to bash the DBX, and you have a little bit in the past, whenever I see them, they do really catch my eye.
No, mate, honestly, like, they look really different to anything else. Like I said to you before, we've just sold our one, by the way. Dynamically, they drive really well dynamically. Just there's a few places that let the car down, like with a lot of Aston Martins, which is why I don't particularly like them. But potentially it could be unbelievable, that car. So maybe the S, it will be unbelievable, because it's definitely a pretty looking SUVs. You know, it's really lovely.
And if they put a nice fruity exhaust on it, so it sounds a bit girthy.
Yeah, and put touchscreen and Apple CarPlay and things that you'd expect from a 2022 car, then we might be on
200 odd grand or whatever.
Oh, mate, yeah. Honestly, it does my head in, it does.
I know, but then at the same time, I spend most of my time going, oh, I'm so fed up. Why aren't there physical buttons in cars? But it's just...
It's 2022.
I know.
You don't want physical buttons, then you want physical buttons, and then you want it nice and clean, and I mean, flipping hell.
I'm impossible to...
You don't like McCanns, because it's like a jet fighter pilot thing.
Yeah, too many buttons.
And then you've got a nice slick thing with
touch...
give me some buttons.
I know, I told you, I'm hard to impress. Now, moving the conversation on, this is sort of car news related, but it's probably a wider topic. So... My mum, I think what I've spoken about this a few times before, ordered an Evoque back in May last year.
Oh, good luck.
So she ordered it as a replacement to her current Evoque, but a new model year update. She got the fruitiest petrol engine because she said she wasn't ready to go hybrid, blah, blah, blah. And at the time they said to her, it would probably be a 9-month wait, I think.
Yes.
Maybe they said a 6-month wait at the time. Anyway, whatever they told her, I think it was 6 to 9 months. She got a call in August or something like that, or September, and they said, oh, it's been pushed back and delivery's not going to be until March next year. And she went, not interested, get rid of it. Cancelled her order.
Yep.
Then it came to, I think, November or December time, and she was like, actually, I think I do still want the car, and, you know, with everything going electric, maybe I just want to get the last great ice-engined Evoque, because she loves these Evoques. And so she called back up and said, look, I changed my mind. Can we start again? What's the currency? He said, well, look, I actually never cancelled your order. This is the dealer. Never actually cancelled your order because I'm so desperate for new stock.
Yeah, they registered it himself.
Once it was in the system, I wanted to run through. So you can still have the car. It's coming in March. So she's like, okay, you know, I'm back excited again. Her car had gone up in value because the world's gone crazy.
Not now, though.
Well, we'll come back to that in 2 seconds.
I'm not going to say a word. I'm going to let you... carry on, but I think I know what you're going to say to me, but keep going.
Okay.
Because this is brilliant.
So don't let us forget to come back to what you just said about the prices cooling off. So, so she's sitting around and she's starting to get excited now. It's coming towards the end of January. The car's going to be a month and a half away. And last week on Thursday at 11:21 in the morning.
Oh, right. Really Pacific.
The dealer got a note to say that Land Rover had pulled her build slot from the line. You knew that was coming?
And I'll tell you why it's coming. Why?
Okay. Well,
you carry on.
So, my mum fuming.
Fuming.
What does that mean? What are you saying? And the dealer, who I know the guy, very nice guy, and obviously not his fault.
No.
Had four cars in total happened to him that day. Mm. So he had to make four customer calls saying that your slot's been pulled or cancelled. And she said, well, what does that mean? He goes, well, we have no update as to when that slot is going to get repositioned, when your car's supposed to be. But at the same time, last week I went to see Lenny at Urban. And he was telling me, because obviously they're in the business of buying Range Rovers, Discoveries, Urban, Defenders, blah,
do
blah,
they buy them direct from Land Rover? Or wherever through, they can get them. Or through a... Right, okay,
wherever
fine.
They can get
right,
them. So they're used, not- second-hand, direct, whatever. You know, right. They're just amassing stocks of all kinds of Land Rover products.
No, what I mean by that, mate, I mean, are they buying them... They're obviously not buying them direct from the manufacturer. They're buying them from the dealer network.
Yes, right, dealer okay, network, but right. also used right, individuals. Okay, you know, I think they just buy them all over the place.
Yeah.
But again, they're struggling with getting hold of stock.
Of course they are.
But they say that they'll have moments with customers will call them up and say, I had a car on order. I've just heard that my slot's been cancelled. I've been waiting 9 months or a year and I've just been told I've gone to the back of the line.
Yeah.
And I've got another 9 months to wait. So they're seeing an increase in demand because of this happening. So let me ask you, why do you think it's happening?
Because, especially with the higher spec stuff, they can't fulfill the extras on the cars. So there's so many things they can't provide to build the car, make the car complete at the moment. They're just pulling orders. So they're just saying, this car can't have, and knowing your mum, she's got the nice spec one. Mm-hmm. So you can't have head-up display, you can't have a roof, you can't have the Meridian audio.
Because they don't have the parts?
They don't have the chips.
Still chip related.
Yeah. But it is parts, mate. It's not just chips. You can't have the Matrix headlights. You know, all these high-end stuff, they run on hundreds and hundreds of computers. And Land Rover, more than most, which is why they sometimes break, because they're reliant so much on computers and wiring. Wiring's not a problem, but the computers and the chips are. So I think that's probably why they pulled her order.
So I thought twofold, it's super interesting insight. I thought firstly, maybe they were doing a Ferrari and pulling her order because somebody had a higher spec order that they wanted. I was like, could that be a thing? Then I thought, oh, maybe, is it the same production line? Is that for a new Range Rover? Maybe they got such demand or they want to pump out the new Range Rovers, they've booted the Evoques. Or I thought, is it snaky and sharky enough that there's a savvy dealer, and I'm not saying necessarily my mum's dealer, that thought I could buy that car, put it in my dealer principal's name, put 500 miles on the clock and sell it for a premium?
I mean, 6 months ago, definitely. Okay. I'm not sure that's the case at the moment, for sure, knowing that, you know, I do the job, but prices have definitely softened off. The bit, I come back to the bit that you said that maybe they're building the bigger stuff. That is partly true. So Land Rover, over the last 6 months, I'm only talking about Land Rover because that's what we're talking about. There's other manufacturers
yeah,
do it
course.
Differently.
No, of course.
They are prioritising the bigger stuff because that's the stuff that's got the bigger margin in for them as a company. So actually, Evoques and Discovery Sports are longer waits than, say, the new big Range Rover because that's what they're concentrating on. And I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think you can order a current Sport now. I think that's it. I think the new ones come in, and because there's such a long wait for cars, I think they're just concentrating on that new Range Rover and the Defender. Because don't forget, there's a huge demand for Defender. So...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There will be some sense in that for sure, 100%.
No matter what, it is a maddening situation for my mum, but a sort of crazy situation. Because I know, of course, of all these delays and things like that, but I hadn't heard of, until last week, bill slots being pulled or being cancelled when it's so close. You know, she's 2 months. Obviously, that's when they're about to start the build, isn't it? So she's been in a queue for however long. And now we're 2 months out. They were probably starting to, you know, action something on that line.
Yeah, so oddly enough, when people sometimes get like an 8 or 9 month wait list for a car, people think it takes that long to build. It takes a couple of days to build a car.
Yeah. It's
on the line. Once they're on the line, and actually when they update you and say your car's on the line, it's already built. It's already done. Yeah, it's already out. Yeah, yeah. It's unbelievable. It's all machines.
Yeah, of course.
So, and all manufacturers are the same, but obviously they all have different, you'll know this because you've been to a manufacturer, they'll all have different times that the lines work. So they'll have a line of Range Rovers, then they'll have a line of Discovery Sports, and yeah, they have different lines, but it's all one factory. So they can only make a certain amount of cars per day, full stop. And they have to decide through demand what they make for the world, because they're not just making it for UK. This is a problem world. Mm-hmm. So
worldwide.
Yeah. So you've got Land Rover's biggest market is still probably Chinese and American. We're very small for Land Rover. So what's happening? The cars are going out there.
Yep.
They're not coming here because it's not their biggest market. And don't forget, all these manufacturers, they're all businesses. They all care about, and they're losing huge amounts of money at the moment because they just can't build the cars. So I know they can't get the parts, but that doesn't stop their fixed overheads. I mean, they're huge, their fixed overheads, and it's a problem for them. So then they prioritize as a percentage, do we have 15,000 quid out of making an Evoque, for instance, or on the same line we can have 30,000 quid out of making a big Range Rover. Which is, that's what they're doing.
So the fundamental, I guess, is when does this end, right? Because, you know, this chip shortage, which we've all heard about for so long now, and is even, you know, Volkswagen, I know people were telling me the other day, is a 9 month wait for a Golf at the moment.
56 like weeks the last time I checked.
Which outrageous.
Is about a year.
It's ridiculous for a Golf. So at some point, the supply has got to even itself out, you know, as COVID starts to decline worldwide and shipping routes and shipping process becomes smoother again, you would think they would start to catch up, but they're also going to still have a backlog. So let's say next month, suddenly all these chips start to get to where they need to be and all these parts to, and everything's smooth and the manufacturer's like, right, we're back to full capacity. You've then got that theoretical backlog of orders to get through.
And we've got another problem as well, which you all voted for, by the way, which is Brexit.
Well, not all of us voted for, Tony.
No.
And also, we have a very international audience. So just to say very quickly before you carry on, don't lose your train of thought. But those of you who aren't British listeners or viewers, I get asked this a lot, actually, when I go and visit other countries, you know, what people think about Brexit and stuff like that. Just so that you know, not everyone in the UK voted for Brexit and not everyone supports it.
It was 49-51. It was very close.
Very close. Mm. So whatever you may have read in your own national news about the situation, there are some of us who are deeply frustrated by it. There's some of us who are super pro it, but it has obviously, it continues to bring up, spool up problems that maybe people didn't appreciate or didn't realise or didn't understand. Mm. So it's an ever-evolving thing.
Mm.
So
cars, obviously, naturally, because of Brexit, and there's lots of other things which is happening in this country now and over the last 6 months that have been hidden behind COVID, but it's not a COVID problem. This is Brexit that will start to kick in now.
Here in the UK.
Here in the UK. And cars is just an example. So when you import a car, there's going to be another tax. So new cars will be naturally 6-10% dearer, just naturally. And the days of pre-COVID, pre-Brexit, whatever you want to call it, both, of cars being unbelievably cheap, I'm not sure, definitely in the near future, we're going to be seeing that anymore. You know, where you could get a car, like, you know, a car that's lost half of its value, a real proper bit of kit for 20,000 quid, and it was 50,000 quid when it was new, and it's 20,000 quid 18 months old, or 30,000 quid. I don't think that's going to happen. Not anytime soon, for sure.
So on that, does that mean buy British, or is there also an increase in export tax? So will British manufacturers also be inherently increasing the values of cars for buying British in the UK?
Yeah, so again, what happens is that people jump on the bandwagon, you see, and it's like we saw it with the fuel crisis where fuel was at a premium, as in you couldn't get it, so they put the prices up of fuel. Have they come back down? No. Same with food. Same with gas. Look at gas.
Insane.
Gone through, we import all our gas, mate. So the people don't like to hear it, but there's a Brexit thing in that. So gas has gone through the roof, and people say, oh, it's not because of this, it's because of that. But there is an implication of Brexit, which is what we all voted for. And I could go really delve in, but I'm not going to, because it's not a political podcast.
Even though somehow it ends up political every week, as we like to say.
And it fascinates me, because I love... this is really geeky, but I really like get off on business. Like, I really like to... No. If
bit,
I
bit
could,
too much information.
If I could sit with the Chancellor and see how he works out, it would absolutely fascinate me, that. And I love to get involved in the way that the world works. So I have half a idea of how it works, because I like it.
Which is the best thing in the world. I think when you have a passion for something, you have an inherent desire to
for
learn
sure.
more.
For sure, yeah.
It's why I keep coming to you and asking you for advice about so many of the financial things, because I know that you have a real a good understanding, but also a passion and an appreciation for it.
It fascinates me, some of it.
And Brexit, as you say, has thrown up so many of these kind of, you know, questions and things that people hadn't considered. A bit of a niche topic, I realise, for our international viewers. So to sort of come round to a point you made very early on in this particular topic, how's that affecting our used car values? Now, I'm gonna fight you a bit here, because you walked in today and you've been saying for a while that prices are cooling off. However, I'll give you three examples, I think, that I've recently encountered where I don't necessarily think that's the case and why I think that's not the case. So, my Abarth outside. Do I want to reveal this? anyway, we buy any car, which is, you've said before, is a very good price indicator.
Until you get there.
Until we get there, they start to kick you in.
They're very clever now, where you buy any car, because they advertise on telly that get your car valued in 30 seconds, but that's not a valuation. It's not a true valuation, because, by the way, you can't value a car in 30 seconds. It's just a very, very, very clever computer system that throws a number.
An attractive number as well.
A very attractive number, and that's done by the guide, and then they adjust. It's very clever system, and then they adjust it daily, or they probably adjust it during the day on what the auction prices are doing. So when you get there 3 days later, or whenever you go there, they don't even now, because they don't ask you about condition or owners, or
they make some assumptions. So when you get your price, you get a list of, here are the assumptions we've made. You know, it's a one owner car. It's got this many keys. It's in this condition. It's got full service history, blah, blah, blah. So there are things that I think you will come on to say that they can then kick you in the bollocks for.
Oh, it's brilliant when you think about it.
Say, oh, well, we quoted you online 15 grand, but actually this. So the price we'll pay you today is 11. And then you're kind of like, well, I'm here, and oh, I'm not going to get any better price. So as you say, it's a genius move, but. Yeah. You did also say at one point that it's a very useful way to get a price for your car.
Gives you an idea. Gives you a guide. A
exactly. Yeah. So, move on from the Abarth, because that was a bit niche and specific. My X3. So obviously now that I've got my next daily, we priced that up maybe a couple of months ago. Did we do it? Like
No. It was this month. It was the start of this month.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Looked at the price. And then when you came in today and said, right, I got my next daily, let's get the X3 gone, you assumed that the price would have dropped off a bit. According to At Least We Buy Any Car, it stayed fairly stable. I think dropped maybe 500 quid, but stayed fairly stable. My mum and her Evoque, her original quote in May was 34 grand. As of January, the start of this month, it was 39. Mm-hmm. So it'd gone up $5,000. And then at the higher end of the market, and this will be our final topic for today when we finally come on to it.
Your mum's is a very, very good example, though, of how... So that big jump from May 21 to... When did she do it?
January, start of this month.
Right, yeah. Okay. So it actually went up more, but it come back in the last quarter. So what happened was, obviously, the big jump was from about May to September, when cars went absolutely through the roof. So I bet if she'd have done that quote in September, it would have been even more.
Would have been even more, okay, fine.
But they've come, it's just common that it's just dipped back off again.
So they're still theoretically up year on year, but they've softened off from where they were at their peak, maybe around something.
100% mate, okay. Because I do it every single day.
Sure.
So.
Oh, no, I'm not doubting you.
I know you're not doubting me. No.
Definitely not doubting you, but I think also, so that's my good analysis there. Because you're so close to it and you're looking at these prices day in, day out, to the general consumer, prices are still up, the market's still strong. And what I was going to say is that, a bit like you mentioned earlier, where with the fuel crisis and things like that, because people in people's heads... The market's strong. I've got value in my car.
Yeah.
If you're selling a car at the minute, privately through a dealer, whatever, I think you're still trying to command super high values because, as far as anyone knows, the market's really strong. And I'll sell it. And, you know, I was, before I settled on what my next daily is, people will know this guy talked about it quite a bit on Instagram, tried to pretend like it wasn't me, but it was. Mm. I looked at FFs for half a second and I said, we'll talk about this at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And my God, at that point of the market, wow, it's strong. Not only was stuff moving fairly quickly, cars like within a month and a half span were going quick, but also at fairly decent-ish money.
Yeah.
And when I went to speak to various dealers, and even when I went to Amari and speaking to the guys at Alexander's Prestige, I do regularly, at the higher end of the market, stuff is still flying and at good money.
For sure, yeah. But as well, what happened at my end of the market, the sub 100 grand, cars got... two-year-old cars got all too close to their list price. So when that becomes so, which is what happened, then people weigh up, do I have a two-year-old car at list that actually 18 months ago I would have got cheaper than list because the dealer would have given me a 10% discount, or do I just, should I just stay in my car and I'll wait? Oh, wait, because it's too close to list and people think, oh, at some point the bubble will burst. And it will, but I don't think it's going to burst like we think it's going to burst. Like I said before, we've had huge increases, 20, 30% across the board. Some people saying 50%. I don't see that. But it's not going to go back down like that, and it won't go down that quickly because, again... The whole market revolves around supply and demand. It's as simple as that. So demand over the last 3-4 months in certain sectors of the motor trade has been dire. No good. In other sectors, like what you're talking about, the 150 to 250 grand, it almost, I know this sounds ridiculous, but like an FF that was 300 grand new, what they really want is a Lusso. But they can't have a Lusso because a Lusso is now a different price bracket.
180 for a V12.
Whatever, yeah. So what they're doing is they're coming back down the market. And then what does that do? Brings the prices up. Because everything is about supply and demand. We've said it so many times before. It's why house prices in London are a fortune. Because everyone, well, maybe not pre-COVID, definitely, wanted to live in London. Prices are through the roof. It's as simple as that. And over the last 3 or 4 months, prices have dipped off because demand is not there. When demand comes back, prices rise again.
So do you think in the spring, are we likely to see an increase in values because demand for cars or whatever? Or do you think this year, actually, if everything does start to even out, new cars will start to come back to the forefront and values will continue to soften ever so slightly or at least hold?
The manufacturer, oddly, although they make new cars, they always, whether they mean to do it, they always dictate used car prices because it always comes from the top. So if they're bashing out cars like there's no tomorrow, then of course your used car is going to go down because you're going to have a new one for not a lot of difference. And again, 80-odd% of people in this country finance cars. We know that. A and on a monthly payment, when it gets too close to list, which is what's been happening, they've come off. But on a monthly payment, they're more money or as the same. So the answer to your question is, mate, and it's very odd that I don't normally know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because
it's all a guessing game.
It's honestly, it's put your finger in your airtime. You know, I just have to react to what's going on now. January in general for me is normally a very, very busy month. We are abnormally quiet. Now, if you'd have said that to me 3 months ago, I wouldn't believe you. So who knows what the market's going to do this year? There has definitely got to be some more softening off on used cars. That has to be. Because they just
stuff silly.
They just reached that point. And I think they did all across the board. And that bigger, higher end market, don't forget when you're looking at some of this stuff, it would have been 250, 300 grand new. And then you're looking at it at 3 years old or 4 years old, and it's half money. So actually, because you can't get the newest model, you're thinking, oh, that's good value. So I'll be safe in that car. That might even go up a bit. It won't, but in people's minds.
Man maths.
yeah, which convinces most people.
How I got into my next daily. Yeah. So let's come back to that because, yeah, I did some posts on Instagram. So behind the scenes, and obviously I'm now revealing that my next daily is not an FF, sadly.
Thank God.
Yeah, behind the scenes for about a month or so, definitely over the Christmas period, this was a fairly... a strong possibility, and there's multiple reasons it hasn't happened, but essentially I haven't really bought a big car on the channel for a while. I did last year, or actually at the end of 2020.
No, you've bought a big car then?
Yes.
You've bought a big car?
I hadn't really revealed that, but thank you anyway. I revealed that I was thinking of doing that, but well done, Tony.
Well, I don't know what he's bought either, but he just said. So, he's flapping now.
I'm flapping now. Cool, man. End of 2020, I bought the 9/11 40th anniversary in the Abarth. Some lockdown projects. But really, before that, I guess the 911 Carrera 2 was the last kind of big-ish car that I'd bought on the channel. So it felt a while, and I was coming, so I was going, okay, now I'm ready. I feel like I'm ready to kind of go again and get something,
Fair enough.
A bit chunky.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, hey, what are my plans for 2022? What do I want to kind of document? And we've been speaking a lot about, the end of one potential era, this combustion engine era, and V12s, waving goodbye to V12s, and now electrics here, and hybrid, blah, blah. And I thought, heck, time to get my next Ferrari, why not? And one of the last great V12s. And I thought, FF just ticks so many boxes, and what a great story to tell. And I'm going to go out there and buy the cheapest FF I can buy, and it's going to be fantastic, and what a great load of content I've got for 2022. So I started looking into it. And fundamentally, buying a cheap FF very quickly becomes the most expensive FF you can buy.
It's a car crash.
So there were cars out there for 75, 80 grand. Unbelievably cheap when it comes to finance because of the residual value. But the moment you drive them away from the forecourt, 25, 30 grand just to get them consistently running. So these were already scaring me a bit. So then I start to research some more. People were saying, really, you kind of want a 2013, 2014 car forward because they have these very... real issues with their four-wheel drive system. And on the early cars, that goes wrong very quickly, and that's a 23 grand bill. So the later cars are slightly better, slightly more, what's called a...
What you really want is you want one of them that you can put Ferrari warranty on. That's what you really want.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the real dream, but that's never going to happen. I wanted mileage that meant I could use the car. So if I was buying a car with 50,000 miles, if I was putting another 20, 30,000 miles.
50?
Yeah. If I was putting another 20 or 30,000 miles on it, it was really literally making it unsellable. So... all of this led
to most of your cars.
All of this led to me suddenly looking at a car which was 40 grand more than I first started. I was looking at 80 grand cars. I was suddenly now looking at 120, 130 grand cars. Then I found out that the batteries literally have to be on trickle charge whenever you're not driving the car.
Yeah.
You cannot leave it for more than 12 or 24 hours without trickle charge.
Yeah.
I don't have that facility at my new place. So I would have had to have rented an additional parking space, which has power, which in London is probably going to be 250, 300 quid a month if you can find the space. So that gets rid of the sort of dailyable usability. Insurance, obviously very high. I couldn't really get Vicky on it because first she didn't want to drive it, and the insurance for her was extortionate because of her driving experience, etc.
Fuel.
So then, well, fuel, 7 mpg is the average. But you're buying a V12 Ferrari, suck it up. I would have to get a little hot hatchback to be the sort of more practical, usable thing for Vicky to use. So it was getting extortionately expensive, a massive headache. And what it boiled down to was, What lessons have I learned over the last 5 years of doing YouTube?
None. None.
Yeah, not wrong.
Not at all. Nothing.
Never buy a car for content.
No.
You know, it's been my remit from day one is buy the cars that I want, film videos with them, and if people find it interesting, then great. I made the error of 2020 going and buying cars for content, the 40th anniversary 9/11, the Abarth, because I thought, hey, with all this COVID stuff's going on, I want project cars that I can work on. It didn't work out. I hardly used the cars. I had too many cars downstairs. I was stressing. And it was a total waste. And here I was about to spend all the money and put myself through insane inconvenience for content. And actually, if I stepped back, there were cars that I wanted for me as an individual that were more affordable, more usable, still interesting. And I was like, yeah.
The problem is for you buying cars as content, you have to change your whole business model and remit, and you have to be more like Tim, because we've had Tim on here,
yep.
And that is how Tim operates. He blatantly said that he operates like that, but he's geared up to operate like that. That's the way he behaves. So if you decided that you was going to do that, you've got to completely change, mate. So
change how I run my business,
yeah.
And change a lot of the elements of the channel. And I would be as excited as a lot of you to do that FF project and live through that, to document how difficult or good or bad it might be. But firstly, I'm not really rich enough to be having 25, 30 grand bills as I walk off the forecourt. Secondly, this is me and my life, and I need a usable car that I can have, and I can't be affording to have two and a half grand monthly payments to sort of cater for all of these needs, and parking in central, parking in outskirts of London, as you put it.
Suburban
London. So long story short, I would love to be that YouTuber, Hoovy's Garage or Stradman, that could go out and buy endless cars just to run the channel, but it's not my channel. And so as excited as I was and as geared up, and heck, I even found a car, took it down for inspection at Furlonger, absolutely amazing. Did a whole inspection on the car, was ready to go ahead and buy it. And I was like,
flapped.
Yeah, what am I doing? Because for example, that particular car had a water pump issue, $5,000 to replace it. Mm. So I was like already like, and I know that's an interesting storyline, but it's just not the way I've run the channel over the years. Mm. And I'd far rather get cars that enable me to go on adventures and create exciting content all over the world than necessarily cars that made me stuck here at workshops.
Yeah.
That's what I tried to do with the 9/11 40th anniversary. Yeah. It's what I tried to do with the Abarth. And I was never motivated to create that content. It never did that well, that content. And so therefore I ended up with two cars I'd paid quite a chunk of money for, sitting around not doing very much with them.
We can probably talk about another car, which I'm not going to drop
can
you
we?
In it.
Can we?
No, well, can we? It's
Yeah.
That has similar bills, not quite to the excess of an FF.
So another one that we can discount, Bentley Bentayga.
Yeah.
This was another sort of big money car that I thought, hey, this could be an
good
interesting...
Good value.
90-odd grand.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's an interesting story as well.
Yeah.
You know, buying the cheapest Bentley Bentayga out there, you know. And I love that car, and it's an SUV. It does all the things I want it to do.
Yeah.
But again, yes, you're right. Looking into it, big dollar to run. But this is the interesting angle, right? This is the YouTube content of buying expensive cars as cheap as you can find them. Because we all think about it. You sit there in Auto Trader and you go, oh my God, there's a Panamera Turbo S for X amount of money. Like, what a thing.
Well, I don't, because I like modern, nice, shiny stuff.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's always that intriguing.
Lots of people buy cars and they think, right, what's the best value car that looks the bomb and it's really good value and cheap. What people tend to forget is that these cars were 200, 300 grand new, and what you're actually buying is a 200 or 300 car, £200,000 car for 80 or 90 grand. You are going to get a bill.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. But a big one.
I know that's interesting, and I know because even I'm like, how bad can it be? Like, but the fundamentals of it are, and maybe I don't have to justify this, but I feel like I have to justify it as an automotive YouTuber. You know, it's not the content I'm looking to create. It's not what I'm intrigued by, and I want somebody else to go and buy that FF and show me and go, actually, it's really not bad, and you don't need to trickle it. So you're seeing why it's taken me so long to find my next daily, because these are conversations I bored Tony with day in, day out for the last few months of like, I'm really tempted for my business to go in this route of buying super expensive car that's insanely expensive to run, that might be absolute hell, but will give me loads of content opportunities, and then buying a car which I actually like and I actually want.
Yeah.
And when it's my money, and unfortunately, I lent into the other route, the safer route. So you might all be disappointed. I don't know, you might be furious. I'm disappointed myself because I really wanted an FF. It's not happening, unfortunately, nor is a Bentayga because Tony's revealed that. But I'm excited because I'm super happy and not daunted. So yeah, I'm still, as you can see, slightly battling with the decision and slightly kicking myself.
I'll give you one very good example of this car crash of a buy a really good value car for not for good value that it was loads of money new, but then it's good value. So I'd say 4 or 5 years ago now, we had a 2012, it was the first of the facelift Bentley V8 cars.
Okay.
Really low mileage, all Bentley service history, one owner from new. It was absolutely lovely. And it was a bit out of my realm, as in where I wanted to be years wise. I think it was like a 6-year-old car, and I normally like to be 4-year-old. And I thought, actually, do you know what? I'll have a go at this car because there's a nice, decent profit in it, because it always is, because there's a big bill when it goes wrong. And what can go wrong? This car is good value. It's 40 or 50,000 quid to buy, and it's got full Bentley history. It's a one owner car. It'll be fine. Sold it. Customer happy, lovely car. 2 weeks later, turbo itself. £23,000 bill.
Wow.
I had to pay it.
See, they, I mean, you know,
Bentley wanted to put an engine in it. So the bloke
still
took
an interesting
it to,
video.
Yeah.
It's an interesting. So I'm like, oh, that sounds tempting.
Yeah, but the poor bloke that bought the car, he'd give 60,000 quid for it or whatever. And he took it into Bentley, and Bentley wanted to charge him for an engine, but it didn't need an engine. But so they wanted to put engines and which was like 50 foot, would have wrote the car off.
Oh my God.
So, but yeah, it cost me as a dealer 23,000 quid to fix.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what I wanted to avoid.
Yeah.
But then also, as I say, it's such a tough thing as an automotive YouTuber where you see the content opportunity versus, but I had to make a business decision. And
yeah,
23 grand, that's 4 years of YouTube videos. You know, my YouTube videos, they owe me about 50 quid a pop at the minute. So there ain't no man, there's just not a business.
There's no man matching
me,
that,
so
for sure.
Anyway, my phone's been going mad because Jaguar just dropping the F-Type back after a quick little service. So I need to pop downstairs and
That's about right. Anyway, we've probably been an hour or so. We
have indeed. So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed that episode. I hope not many, you might be disappointed initially with the My Next Daily Chat, but I think you're going to be excited when I reveal it. So as I say, subscribe now and turn on notifications so you don't miss that announcement. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, keep listening there as well. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. And I'm obviously at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And we'll be back with you next week. And I think we might be having one of our interview specials coming up in the next few weeks. So yes,
I like them.
Stay tuned for that as well. Okay, we'll wrap up today's episode. See you soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.